Horror Movie Talk, brought to you by Fill That Box in South Longview, Washington. Fill That Box has all the very best container brands for you to fill with anything you want. Sexual innuendo goes in this endo. Joke commercial spot done. Hello and welcome to Horror Movie Talk, an opinionated and accidentally funny horror movie review show. Your schlubby hosts each week are Bryce Hansen, the cool collected nihilist, and David Day, a guy who fucks. New theatrical releases always get priority, but we also review older horror movies, both good and horrible. I'm David Day.
And I'm Bryce Hansen.
How are you guys doing today? We got a pretty cool movie for you, Creepshow from 1982, which I enjoyed quite a bit, but before that, we're going to plug ourselves. So check us out on horrormovietalk.com, also on social media, mostly Facebook and Twitter. So check us out on there. Links in the website to social media. Also, check us out on... Oh, no, that's incorrect. I'm sorry. The next spot is actually a Shudder commercial. So we have a pretty sweet deal for our listeners. For Shudder, S-H-U-D-D-E-R, like you're shivering, but instead you're shuddering.
And, wait, I don't understand.
Oh, okay.
Explain it further and spell it slower.
S.
Just kidding.
Okay. So Shudder is very similar to Netflix. It's a streaming platform, but just for horror movies, thrillers. There's also some crime, drama, kind of thrillery kind of stuff on there as well. And instead of the normal... promo deal, which is a 7-day free trial. If you enter HMT at checkout, you get a free 30-day trial to go ahead and, you know, see what they got, which is actually a lot of exclusives like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Creepshow. So you guys should check it out. Enter HMT at checkout, shudder.com. Also, we joined the Amazon Associates program, which means if you want to support the podcast, go ahead and click through the link on our website, and you'll be helping us out quite a bit. So anytime you're doing shopping on Amazon, go ahead and click through the link at the top of our site, and we'll get a little piece of that, and we would appreciate it greatly. So... One more thing before we get moving here. You can take our audience survey. I don't know when we'll release this, so the audience survey might be done by that point. But if
the link will still be there.
Okay,
we're gonna probably stop pushing it on the show.
I think.
That's reasonable. We're gonna get for now.
Yeah, so
we're planning on doing it till the end of the year, but I know we have like 4 episodes in the bag somewhere that mention it. So I mean, it'll still be available.
Cool. All right. We post new episodes every Wednesday, and so you should subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or something like that. If you want to help us out a whole bunch, we would love you for it. We love you anyway, but we'll love you more if you subscribe and rate.
Personally, I won't love you unless you leave a review on
iTunes.
There you
go.
So if you want to curry Bryce Hansen's favor, you know what to do.
I know what to do, and it ain't that. So we'll start out we start out by giving a brief review and our score for the movie. We score on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being terrible, 10 being fabulous, and 5 being just kind of average, just kind of a C. Later, we'll be doing Lifetime Movie or Horror Movie, which is a fun bit where Bryce will have to guess what the description I'm reading is. It's going to either be a Lifetime Movie or a Horror Movie. Pretty fun game. And then we will also be doing Kill Count, a game where Bryce has to guess which movie has the higher kill count. And I've set it up to be just as diabolical as as he has in the past. Today's kill count will be themed sci-fi / extremely high body count. So,
okay.
So that's kind of going to be the theme. Thanks again for listening, and let's get into the show. Today, like I said before, we watched Creepshow from 1982, and I had a whole lot of fun. It's presented in a really fun way, has a ton of big names, and if you aren't into the story, you can just wait 20 minutes and see a new one, because it's a compilation of 5 short horror stories. This was the only Romero film, so this was directed by George A. Romero. This is the only Romero film to open at number one in the weekend box office, and it was considered a sleeper hit in theaters, and its charm is mostly to blame for its success. So, without further ado, here's the trailer.
Coming soon. Jolting tales of horror. Creepshow. From the author of Carrie, The Shining, and Cujo. And the creator of Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. You'll scream at ghastly ghouls. Cringe at weird kids. And shiver at the doings of evil doctors.
This is going to be extremely painful, Mr. Verrill.
Creepshow will grab you, grow on you, and give you the creeps.
No, this is going to be an entirely new experience.
Creepshow, the most fun you'll ever have being scared.
So Creepshow can be found streaming on Shudder, enter HMT at checkout, and Amazon. Click through the link on the top of our site. It's a cult classic that has remained low on horror fans' collective radar since it was released. It was directed by the great and powerful George A. Romero and written by Stephen King. This is, I believe, Stephen King's very first screenplay that he wrote.
Yeah, he had movies that came out before. Well, he had movies that were based off of his novels that came out before.
Right. But Stephen King was directly responsible for the screenplay on this. And he also acted in... He was the sole star of one of the 5 stories.
And was this all, like, brand new? Or were these based on existing short stories? Do you know?
That's a good question. I believe they were all based on existing short stories that he had written previously.
Okay.
So this was, you know, Stephen King has a pretty legendary work ethic, and he just I think the idea of this was George A. Romero and Stephen King were friends, and they had kind of been looking for something to do together for a long time, and Stephen King just pulled this all together, pulled all his a bunch of useful short stories together that lended themselves well to this format, and they made it happen. So I enjoyed this movie so much that last night I went through and watched Creepshow 2,
yeah,
which was based on short stories written by Stephen King, and George A. Romero did the screenplay. He punched it all up, and then it was directed by David something something, and it was not nearly as good to my eyes.
Yeah.
Anyway, add to it. So add to Creepshow that it had a cast that includes Leslie Nielsen, Ted Danson, Ed Harris, Adrian Barbeau, and Stephen King himself, and you basically have to me a horror gem. The acting is hammy, the actors are having fun, the stories are spooky but not hard to handle for the easily spooked horror fan. This movie is like a trip down to Nostalgia Town. Creepshow is fun, funny, it's scary. I had a great time with Creepshow, and I envision going back to this movie for, you know, kind of like a yearly basis kind of thing, because it was just fun. I gave Creepshow an 8 out of 10. while it is an excellent example of a cult classic, I think it's too light and breezy to be much higher than an 8 out of 10. So I think that's a ceiling for it. What did you think about it?
I think that's pretty generous. I mean, full disclosure, I watched this and I was really tired, so I wasn't super into it. I think if you're talking about for what it is, then yeah, it's an 8 out of 10. Like, for what it's trying to be, it's really good at it.
Right.
Of the tone and, like, the campiness and, you know, introducing the gore elements when it can. It's really good, but for me, it was like, I don't know, it's hard to think of it as that much better than like a TV quality. Like, if this was on TV, I would definitely watch it.
Yeah.
But I'd give it like, yeah, like a 6 out of 10.
That's probably fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I shouldn't be allowed to review movies that just lean very heavily towards all the things that I like a lot, right?
Yeah.
Because this is like an homage to creepy and eerie comic titles, right? So there's these comic titles called Creepy and Eerie, and
like pretty specifically in like the 50s and 60s.
50s kind of. And 60s, yeah. And I mean, actually, I believe... Well, I don't know. I should have done a little bit more research on the publication dates that Creepy and Eerie ranged from. But lots of people lots of people's childhoods were formed reading Creepy and Eerie, and one of them is definitely Stephen King. He has a little vignette at the start and the end of this movie where there's this little kid whose dad just super disapproves of him reading comic books.
It's very 80s. Yeah, very Twisted Sister.
Yeah. It's like, screw you, dad. Don't take my comics away. And the dad's just an ultra douche. And yeah, it's got like an interesting kind of vibe that it mm-hmm. gives off, which is like Stephen King's a little kid and his dad threw away his comic book. Anyway. Without further ado, let's transition to the spoilers.
Spoilers.
So Creepshow is presented in kind of a comic book format. I mean, it's cute and quaint and charming, but it's mostly a gimmick. Mm-hmm. But what did you think about the...
The real gimmick is that it's a bunch of short stories, and it's a bunch of shorts back-to-back. And to tie shorts together like that in a movie, there has to be a gimmick, and this is probably one of the more effective ones.
Yeah, that's true.
Where it's just, you know, it's... It doesn't try to pull them together too much to where you're like, yeah, but they're all separate things. It's like it pulls you out enough to where you're like, okay, we're reset.
Yeah,
doing this now, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the transitions and the comic book theme, they're all animated for the most part, and or at least they transition from live action into animation and then back again. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of like do some framing, and there's even a couple spots where they do like quote unquote edgy like double shots, you know, side by side shots where there's action happening in one frame over here and simultaneously on another frame on the uh-huh. screen there's action happening over here. And yeah, I mean, it's not like it's the focal point of the movie, but...
Yeah, it's always interesting when movies try to pull over the tone and visual style of comic books, it almost always fails miserably.
It really does.
And this one, you just give it a lot of leeway because it's a bunch of shorts and there's space for stylistic flair at the end of each short and transitioning it, you know?
Yeah.
Like the color changes like drastically in the, you know, the final scenes usually to where it's like super blue or red lights and stuff. And I can think of a couple other movies where they try to do the comic book
Name them.
Thing.
Can you think of them?
Oh, yeah. One of using like panel style was Hulk, was Ang Lee's Hulk, the original Hulk movie.
Wow.
Modern Hulk movie. Like he really doubled down on comic panels and like transitional sweep stuff that looked like comic panels and stuff.
That would be horrible. I never saw that.
People rag on it so much. I saw it and I was like, it was okay. I mean, it was interesting.
That's a modern day movie. That's like 2000 something.
Yeah, it was like early 2000s. The other one, in terms of tone, were the ones that do it worse. A lot of the 90s superhero movies tried to use like comic book tone.
Yeah.
Like Daredevil is laughably bad.
Yeah, oof.
The worst example of it, and when you start, the movie's so bad, one of the worst movies, but once you view it through the lens of, oh, he's trying to make it a comic book movie, it starts to make a little more sense, Batman and Robin.
Oh, was that the intent? I guess
Joel,
so.
Joel Schumacher. And, yeah, it was so campy and like so.
That's the one with
bright and colorful and just ridiculous
Jim Carrey,
set
right?
design. No, that was Batman Forever. Batman and Robin was the worst one out of Joel Schumacher's, which had Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
Oh man,
and Uma
I
Thurman
loved that one
as Green Ivy.
I loved how terrible that movie was. Nice to meet you, everybody. Freeze. Chill.
It's like
cool party.
It's so bad. It's like,
how dare you,
unintentionally funny at many, many parts.
Yeah, it's great.
But yeah, so usually using the comic, you know, elements and tone doesn't usually work out too well, but with this it did. I thought it worked pretty good.
Yeah. The first of the stories that Creepshow has to offer is titled Father's Day, and is a story of a well-to-do family who are, essentially, they're all just reprehensible human beings who each get their own kind of comeuppance. There's a lot of comeuppance in this whole movie. All across all the stories, people are getting theirs. So if you like revenge, petty revenge, or like non-petty revenge, any kind of revenge, you'll like Creepshow. This family had a father who is now dead. And he was killed because he was just a horrible person to his kids, and in particular to Bedelia, who he was berating one day. He was berating her and yelling at her and saying, "Bedelia, it's Father's Day. Where's my cake? It's Father's Day. Why haven't you given me my cake, Bedelia?" And then she comes in,
played by Eric Cartman.
"Hey, Bedelia, where are you?" And he's just being a real jerk. The rest of the family...
I mean, this guy was a real jerk.
He's a real jerk. The rest of the family... so he gets killed, and the rest of the family just basically lives off of their inheritance from Rich Papa. So on this Father's Day, the day that we're watching, he comes back from the dead after Bedelia, who goes to visit his grave, spills some of her whiskey on his grave. Ooh, what's that mean? Some sort of Irish bringing people back to life with alcohol sort of thing. I think there's a...
Are you just making that up? Or is
no,
that
I think
thing?
That's an actual... Of course that's a real thing.
I thought she was just pouring one out for the homies.
Yeah, so he like comes out the ground and fucking wrecks her. And then he just proceeds to wreck everyone else on his happy Father's Day, death day.
Yeah, the creature design or the makeup on this movie, I think they just defaulted to more.
Yeah.
Like,
just keep it on there.
I expected it to be different, like it to be more of an 80s style of like the goopy, you know, gory stuff.
No, it was the blocky.
It was very much like the black and white monster features,
right?
Makeup.
Yeah, it was like going back to the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not about adding prosthetics that like accentuate a human face. It's like, no, we're gonna put a huge fucking mask on you with giant fake teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's gonna you're gonna be caked in dirt.
Yeah.
Caked in dirt.
Yeah. Like at least half an inch all around.
It's campy as shit.
Yeah.
It's really a lot of fun. Father's Day presents a bit of a lesson to the audience, which I took to be you get what you give, or don't be a dick, especially when family is involved. So, you know, there's a little bit of a lesson in that. There's a lesson in all of these. Like, it's one of these, like, it's very similar to Creepy and Eerie Comics, which is, hey, kids, here's something that's kind of spooky, and also, here's how we justify it to mom and dad.
Morality tale.
Morality tale. Yeah. Where did Father's Day land on your ranking of these? Can you?
It was a hard meh.
Yeah,
that was the last. For me, I didn't care at
this
all
one,
about it.
This one had Ed. What's his butt? The guy from
Ed Harris. Oh, that's who it was.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Peter Weller for some reason.
What?
I thought it was like that's a. I think I labeled him Peter Weller in my mind, even though like it didn't fit. I was like, he looks really weird when he's young. Like, he's not that much younger than RoboCop, but why does he look so?
They do look very similar, don't they?
So different, but yeah, I think it actually is Ed Harris.
He looks like a young Ed Harris. Yeah, nothing too crazy or notable. They start out with the weakest, which is probably a good way to go. The second story is titled The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill, which is based on the short story that Stephen King wrote called Weeds. This is a one-man play starring King himself as a goofy hillbilly who finds the goofiest hillbilly.
Oh, you done it now, Jordy Verrill? You lunkhead.
He finds a meteorite that crashes to Earth in his yard. And boy, is he goofy. He's goofy as fuck.
This is the one that like works for me most because it's so committed.
Yeah.
It's Stephen King is not an actor, but he definitely knows what tone he's going for in this and goes whole hog.
Well, if you're gonna like, it's a good strategy if you're not an actor, right?
Right.
Just commit to something and then fucking go all the way in.
Yeah, if you're going to be in a role as a non-actor, be the idiot.
Right. Yeah, cuz you can do that. I promise you. You can be an idiot. Anyone listening. And Stephen King can be too. I couldn't tell I didn't recognize him right off the bat. I'm not used to looking at Stephen King's face or hearing his voice.
And I think now you mostly see him with glasses, and he wasn't wearing glasses. And he was very young
and
at the time.
Goofy. Like, yeah. He made a big effort to cross his eyes.
How much coke do you think Stephen King was on?
All the coke. All of it. he was having a great time. Yeah, so this is a one-man play. Actually, there's one or two other actors. There's a college professor who he.
Well, it's like does he actually talk to him, or is it all in like in his mind?
Yeah, it's in his mind.
In the movie, yeah.
Yeah. So he like approaches this meteorite that lands in his yard, and of course he touches it, and then he has dreams about how rich he's going to become from discovering this you know alien thing that crashed to Earth, but he touches it, which is basically enough to spell his doom. He bumbles and stumbles around as his luck grows worse and worse, which is kind of the theme of this one.
Oh, you done it now, Jordy Verrill, you lunkhead.
He's a real lunkhead, let me tell you. Yeah, so he bumbles and stumbles around as everything he touches and everything that the meteorite touches begins to sprout alien life.
Alien plants.
Vegetation.
Like grass.
Yeah, and beards, like vine beards.
Yeah, this character is so dumb that you question whether he should be living alone.
Oh, it was surprising to me that he was.
Right.
He was living alone in an old shanty, you know, that was clearly passed down from generations of Verrills.
Mm-hmm.
And,
You done it now, Jordy Verrill? You monkhead.
Good Lord.
They said when they got the shack. Oh, you done it now,
Jordy Verrill. You lunkhead.
But it was celebratory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When
they got the house.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I see where you're going with that. Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill was reminiscent of pulp magazines and stories from the 50s and 60s. I enjoyed the special effects in this quite a bit.
Yeah. The whole thing was so dumb that the special effects matched, but they were fun. Yeah. It was dumb and fun. Then at the end, he blows his fucking plant brains out.
Yeah.
And it's like, great.
The amount of plants that they commit to this set is insane. And it produces like a Star Trek-esque, like classic Star Trek-esque kind of quality.
Right.
To the set that you really have not seen since something, you know, since a stage production like, you know, a campy stage right. production like Star Trek.
A lot of these, if you take out the overt horror stuff, a lot of it's like Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
You know?
Very much.
This was probably the most Twilight Zone type story
yeah.
out of all of them.
Yeah, it was. It was Twilight Zone in color. Mm-hmm. And it was, it did an admirable job of being, you know, of being Twilight Zone in color.
Yeah, and they didn't have to kill any kids to do it.
No, just Jordy. Mm-hmm. He had to, he definitely had to off himself. Because mm-hmm. he was being overtaken with plants.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing you can do. What can you do? You can't trim them back. They had to be sprouting in his throat and stuff.
Yeah. That's a good question. I feel like I'd just live with it.
Oh, you just live with the plants growing out of your eyes?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, I'll just deal with this shit now.
Vegetative state.
That's what...
Womp womp.
Whatever.
Where does this one... This one falls as your favorite, I think.
Yeah, in terms of tone. In terms of, like, stick with me.
Yeah.
Like, that's... It's the best example of what it's trying to be, I think.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably fair. So the next short story is titled Something to Tide You Over.
That's a play on words.
That's a clue. I've got such a raging clue right now. The third story...
It's about laundry detergent.
Yeah, this one stars Ted Danson as Harry, who's the victim to Liam Neeson, who is a wealthy psychopathic killer. Although, he had a good reason. Which is, Ted Danson slept with his wife a lot. So I wouldn't, you know, I might do what Liam Neeson does if someone were to sleep with my wife.
All right, note to self: don't sleep with David's wife.
That's right.
Actually, I think I'm pretty safe. I'm pretty sure you would change your mind by the time you dug a hole the size that I could fit in.
I'd make you dig it.
Oh. That's mean, because Leslie Nielsen dug it for Ted Danson. He just made himself bury him.
Oh.
Made him bury himself.
I remember this incorrectly then. I thought he made him dig it up. That's dumb. Why would you do all the work when you got this guy you got at gunpoint? Yeah, so this transitions us nicely into kind of the way it starts out, which is Liam brings Ted to the beach, a private beach that he owns. And, yeah, he presents him with this gigantic grave-sized hole in the sand, which would be very difficult to dig. Very, very. Because every time I've managed to dig sand, you know, it just kind of falls back in on itself. So, not a fun thing to have to do. But what he ends up doing is he's got him at gunpoint. He makes him fill the sand all around him. Right, so like he's almost like he's burying him alive, but he leaves his head up above the sand, and then he places a camera on him, and places a TV in front of him and attaches this long wire to the TV that sends a feed to the TV of his wife, who is also buried neck deep in the sand, and the tide is coming in. And so Ted Danson is forced to captively sit and watch as Liam's wife, his lover, is taken by the tide, drowns in the tide. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that's a fucking creepy concept.
Yeah, it was the best concept out of all the stories.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, this one actually was the best. Like, I say the Stephen King one was the best for the tone, but this one, in terms of quality,
yeah,
was the best.
Because it had Liam Neeson.
It's not Liam Neeson, it's...
Liam Nielsen.
Liam Nielsen.
Yeah, sorry. I always say Liam Neeson.
Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen. It's what?
Not Liam.
Oh, shit!
Leslie. It's Leslie. You've been saying Liam, though. I've been spacing out.
I have, too, obviously. Leslie Nielsen. Liam yeah. Neeson.
So, Leslie Nielsen from the Naked Gun movies. Yeah.
Yes. He's fabulous.
And Airplane. Yeah, it's great seeing him as a villain. And he does it great. Yeah. Like, it's weird seeing Leslie Nielsen playing serious roles.
Yeah. But which is what he did for a long time, right?
Yeah. But he did great.
Yeah.
And you really believe, like, this was a arrogant psychopath killing these people.
It was,
you know?
Yeah, it was so interesting to watch him, yeah, like you said, do a serious role. Because you really, you see a vet, you know?
Yeah.
He just exudes, like, I'm a fucking pro at this.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun to get to see him not be so hammy, but still be kind of hammy, you know?
Yeah, and like in my experience, like my Leslie Nielsen growing up was the old Leslie Nielsen. Like he was definitely, it was funny because he was old too.
Right.
You know, not just because he was funny, but it was also funny seeing him on Naked Gun, like the sequels.
Yeah.
We're just like an old dude. And this one, he's still young.
Yeah.
Like, he's got white hair and stuff, but you can still tell, like, you know.
He's like 55,
yeah.
60. Not aged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I was reading some trivia on this, and but the interesting part about this whole thing is he had his sense of humor, like, I mean, he obviously had his sense of humor his whole life, but like walking around the set, he had an actual fart machine that he had in his pocket that produced fart sounds, and he would try and get people to crack up. So Ted Danson couldn't hold a straight face while looking at Leslie Nielsen because he was so conditioned to like having this fart thing go off that when Leslie Nielsen would, when the camera would cut away and look at Ted Danson, Leslie Nielsen would be like, give him the look. And Ted just couldn't hold it together. So he'd like, he conditioned the set with this fart box, which is, that's such a great tidbit.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. Anyway, so shocking. Leslie Nielsen gets his comeuppance, and his wife and Ted Danson come back from the watery deep, and just to you know, to make sure he gets his, which was super campy.
Yeah, another case of what should we do with the makeup design? More. The answer is more.
Lots more.
And then they asked that like 20 more times, and then they landed on like, all right, that seems good. Yeah. They looked like, I'm trying to remember, and I can't remember. I'll remember it later.
So Something to Tide You Over was actually a pretty fun story.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. Is the third, is the dead middle of Creepshow, to be followed by The Crate, which is, I think it's the longest, and probably for me, it's my favorite, and I think it's the most notable story from like from the movie for fans, because it has kind of a Indiana Jones sort of, boy, which one is that?
Ark of the Covenant.
Is it Ark of the Covenant? I think it's Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, where they
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, so it has a Raiders of the Lost Ark sort of vibe. You know that vibe. You know that that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where they go to the warehouse, and Ark is in a box in a warehouse full of other boxes that are probably fucking just waiting to be rediscovered. You know, just a bunch of weird, crazy shit. It's very that. This the crate is very much Raiders of the Lost Ark, the Covenant that. Because a college janitor loses a quarter underneath a staircase that's just kind of off in a corner. And as he goes to try and retrieve it, because quarters, you know.
They were worth something back then. Yeah,
back then a quarter was probably like $4,000 or $5,000 to us now. So he goes, looks under the stairwell, and he sees this crate that has this date from like the 19th century, you know, like 1826 or something like that. And he's like, wow, goddamn, like, this is a really old box. What's in here? It's got all dusty, and what's in here? So he goes and he tells a college professor, and the college professor's like, okay, he gets him from a party, right? You were asleep at this point.
I was asleep
Look
at this
you.
Point.
Look at you. Goddamn, this
I'm
is
just
so
glossing
upsetting.
Over.
This is very upsetting to me.
All I remember is that, yeah.
So he goes.
After they open it.
Yeah, he notifies Dexter Stanley, a college professor, and they open up the box to find one of the most crazy movie monsters that I can recall from the 80s, or at all.
It was like the werewolf from Thriller.
Mixed, like, but with a lot of extra teeth.
Yeah.
Like, tons. Way too much teeth.
Yeah, where the proportions are, like, way off, like... That's what one of the disturbing things, because it felt like it could either be 7 feet tall or 4 feet tall.
Right.
And
yeah, the proportions
could either be like, I mean, obviously it can fit in a box somehow, but is it like cat size to where it looks huge, but it can actually sneak underneath a door?
Ooh, that's creepy.
Like, yeah, I couldn't get a read on how big this thing was supposed to be.
There's a lot of the proportions in the crate that are all fucked up, which is to say exactly what you mentioned, right? So the size of the thing, the box is not that big. It's like maybe 3.5 feet by 3.5 feet square. And then it comes out and it seems gigantic because it pulls a man in and devours him whole. And then it proceeds to eat like two or three more people. Eat them up. Mm-hmm. How much room did this thing have in his body?
Right.
Was the box just full of shit? It was incredible how much this thing ate. But it was in this tiny little box. And it was very powerful. It was very strong for having been in a box for like over 100 years.
Yeah.
Which makes it, you know, more interesting. One of the interesting little tidbits about this was that on the side of the box, it said, from Antarctica. And I think it had some sort of verbiage on there that alluded to the or made a callback to The Thing or the original movie The Thing. So that's kind of
could be The Thing.
Oh, maybe it is The Thing.
It's a thing.
It is a thing. It's definitely a thing. The crate also had a great story about Northrop. This dude, another college professor, whose old lady. She was a real bitch. And the amount of revenge and comeuppance.
This guy was a real jerk.
It was a girl.
Yeah, she was a real jerk. the amount of revenge and comeuppance in the crate works really well because she's just treating Northrop like her slave, basically. And everybody hates her. Nobody's interested in talking to this horrible woman. And once Northrop learns that there's this thing in this crate at the college, he's like, oh, here's my chance. I got to get rid of my old lady. So he runs over to the college. He cleans up all the gore from all the people that this thing's killed. And he carefully makes sure that the box is intact. And then he runs back. He calls his wife and he's like, oh, dear, my friend Dexter Stanley, he's here. And I think he's assaulted a woman and you need to help me cover this up. And so she comes running and she's like, Northrop, what have you done this time? I have to clean up all your messes. And then he gets the monster to eat her. And he touches the monster in a lake or in a I couldn't really tell. It was
I think it was a well.
An old quarry, like that's all full of water.
Okay.
Something like that.
I was also asleep at that point, probably. Mm. I knew it contained water and it was deep.
This is very useful. It's good information. So I really enjoyed the crate. I can see why, and I think it kind of put Creepshow on the map as far as being iconic, just because of that monster.
Yeah, the monster design, the concept is great.
Yeah.
This is another one that was very Twilight Zone-ish.
Yes.
I could totally see this on Twilight Zone, because it contains, like, temptation.
Oh, yeah.
It contains, like, plotting.
Yeah.
You know?
Dastardly plotting.
The one thing that it doesn't have quite right is that the husband that kills his wife doesn't get comeuppance. If it was a Twilight Zone episode, it would backfire on him, definitely.
He paid his due. Yeah, but if it was a Twilight episode, he would have definitely gotten his. Which kind of leads nicely into the last story in Creepshow, which is they're creeping up on you. This is definitely another one that would be found in the Twilight Zone, or at least has that that same feel. They're Creeping Up on You is the final installment, and it's effective and fun. It was, I don't know, it's memorable for the fact that it's kind of a one-trick pony. It stars E.G. Marshall as Upson Pratt, who is cruel and ruthless and the owner of some gigantic corporation or business. And he lives very much like Howard Hughes did, in a hermetically sealed apartment. Right, so he's very worried about germs and things being clean and perfect and pristine, and this movie just basically plays on that. So this is like, what would happen if Howard Hughes had a real big bug problem in his house? And the answer is,
freak out
real bad. So this was actually the most as you know, at the start of the story. He notices one little cockroach run along, you know, his countertop, and he's like, "Oh no!
Holy cow!
If there's one cockroach, yeah, you're reading ahead here. If there's one cockroach, there's bound to be hundreds. So I have to nip this in the bud." And one balloons into two, and two balloons into like 20 million. And the interesting thing about this story is it was by far and away the most expensive part of the movie because of the cockroaches.
This is astounding.
During Fan Expo Canada 2015, George A. Romero had said that the cockroaches were the most expensive part of the movie. This is off of the trivia section for Creepshow in IMDb, stating that the cockroaches cost 50 cents a piece and they used more than 250,000 of them, for a grand total of $125,000 on cockroaches alone. So all of Creepshow's budget basically went to cockroaches, which is pretty epic. Like, that could be the tagline right there.
They certainly didn't spend it on makeup.
No.
They're like,
we got to save that money for the cockroach.
They hired like the local high school production of The Crucible to do the makeup.
Yeah.
For $20.
Yeah.
And then they spent, you know, $100,000 on cockroaches.
I think the makeup was intentionally shitty.
Yeah.
I mean, not shitty, but stylized and nostalgic.
Right.
Stylized, yeah. Geared towards nostalgia.
Yeah, it was very much like Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes. Yes. Type. Or any bad guy from Star Trek.
Right, yeah,
just big and wobbly, yeah, and goofy. Yeah, so at the end of They're Creeping Up on You, he locks himself into like the ultra hermetically sealed room and is eaten alive by cockroaches and they're stacked like 3 feet high in this room.
Well, the best shot in the whole movie is like after it goes to him stealing himself in the room, and then the cockroaches just coming out of the woodworks into the room.
Yeah.
And then it leaves him for a second, then comes back.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like him just laying in bed, and he looks normal.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, like his skin is moving and yeah. all these cockroaches start coming out of his skin and his mouth and his like
that was great.
That makeup was really good.
Yeah.
That was
crazy.
Like, and that was one of the best. That's like one of the best sequences in a horror movie that I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really effective.
If you were to give someone a script that said, and then all the cockroaches start crawling out from underneath his skin and fill the entire room, it was like, yeah, they pulled it off. Yeah. That was pretty good.
Yeah. And so he ends up in this room full of cockroaches, like 3 feet deep. And as it turns out, those weren't all cockroaches. There was the top layers of them were, but mostly it was raisins.
That's funny. Which are just as frightening.
Oh, that's the raisin!
For me, it would get scarier the more they touch me.
Mm-hmm. The raisins, I don't like them touching me. So my question to the audience today is, have you seen Creepshow? And if so, what's your favorite story? Because Bryce and I differed a little bit on our favorite story. I think mine was probably The Crate, whereas Bryce slept through The Crate. So, what's your favorite short story on Creepshow if you've seen it? And, if not, what's your favorite? And then I tailed off and didn't write the rest of my question to the audience because I was tired too. It's been a rough week.
Yeah.
It's for me anyway. There's just a lot. It's a lot to a podcast, as it turns out. It's a fucking load of work.
Yeah. I've just been tired the last couple of days.
Yeah, me too.
Right around the time where I'd be watching movies, normally I could go till like 1 o'clock, but like around 10:30, I'm like, I'm starting to fall asleep now.
So you're now what I normally am.
Right.
And I've been tired this week.
Right.
So 8:30 rolls around, I'm like, oh, well, I think I'm turning in now. So the one last interesting tidbit about Creepshow. Creepshow, the crew that produced it was also the crew for Sleepaway Camp.
Oh.
Yeah, according to Jonathan Tiersten.
So they would have done the Sleepaway Camp the next year.
Right. Yeah, so they did Creepshow in 82 and then got back together and were like, hey, let's do another fucking campy horror movie. Let's do Sleepaway Camp.
And we got that episode coming up later next year.
Maybe before this episode airs. Maybe later. I don't know. We'll have to see. Haven't determined yet. Been thinking about getting a release calendar up on the site so that our audience can watch the movies ahead of time before we review them, but I don't know if I want to commit that hard to a predetermined.
Yeah, we want to give ourselves some wiggle room.
Yeah,
that if like a kid goes into the hospital or something, we can just choose one from the.
Yeah, maybe it's like a tentative release schedule. So yeah. Like, just watch all these movies.
Or what we could do, if the listeners are interested,
let us know on Facebook.
Just set up the Patreon and say you can access all the episodes that haven't come out yet.
Yeah, you'd really have to pull our leg on that one. You have to let us know what you think on Twitter or Facebook because I'm not doing that shit unless you guys actually say you want it. Mm-hmm. So final recommendations. Who do you think would like Creepshow? You personally.
You know, I think Aaron might almost like Creepshow. Like, people that aren't necessarily horror fans.
Yeah.
That are into kitsch or, like, over-the-top.
Cult.
Corny stuff. Yeah, cult movies. People that like cult classic stuff.
Yeah, I agree completely. That's almost exactly word for word what I was going to say. It's kind of goes down as a pop culture piece, right? Which is, it's just something that everyone should see because it's an interesting piece of commentary on pop culture from the 50s and 60s and the 80s.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm surprised that I've never seen it on TV. This seems like it'd be ideal for TV.
It's perfect. It's light with intermittent, gore that can easily be edited nicely.
Right.
Like, I'm thinking specifically of the time frame when we grew up where violence couldn't really make it onto, mm-hmm. even onto cable, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good point. I never ever saw Creepshow show up anywhere on TV. So with that, that's our review of Creepshow. Let's transition into Lifetime movie or horror movie. Horror movie is a bit where I read a description of a movie, five movies to be
exact. You did drink coffee before we started.
I did.
You must be really tired.
Yeah, I am. It's a bit where I read five descriptions to Bryce, and he has to descriptions of movies to Bryce, and he has to determine whether or not it's a Lifetime movie or a horror movie.
I'm up for it. I was 5 for 5 last time.
There, no, you were not. You were 5 for 5. You got 100% right.
I think I was.
Wow, we're gonna have to go back and check the records on that. Was that on which episode was that on?
That was on
the one that I emceed last
week. Killing
of
the Sacred Deer.
Oh no, we'll have to go back and check the tapes. Okay. Are you ready? Are you ready for the first description? All right. First description goes a little something like this. A 40-something ex-policeman named Joe initiates an online relationship with a 20-something Tanya Sullivan. Conflicts arise after Tanya flies to Atlantic City to seduce Joe, and she reveals to him that she is married.
I mean, it has to be Lifetime.
Does it?
With a name like Tanya Sullivan, Totally a Lifetime movie.
Why is that totally a Lifetime movie?
I don't know. It just hits me.
Tanya does reek of Lifetime, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It must be because of the Harding.
I don't know. Just Tanya Sullivan. It's like giving you information that you wouldn't care about.
Right. That you wouldn't care about.
Yeah.
But your wife or some other woman might very much. Oh, Tanya.
Like, there's not enough actual interesting material in the plot that they've got to be like, and her name's Tanya Sullivan.
Hmm.
It's like, okay.
All right. Yeah, well, you're dead on. This is a Lifetime movie called Fatal Desire from 2006. If you want, you can go check it out. If that sounds like it's right up your alley, no, you know, no judgment. Just go check it out. Okay, movie number two.
Okay, so it's a horror movie.
A shy.
Since you just said horror. You're like, oh, wait, no.
A shy little girl whose dad remarried 2 years after her mom's death makes friends with an imaginary playmate after they move to a new home.
That's it?
That's the description of the movie.
That's a pretty good one. It could be both.
Could be either.
I'm going to say horror movie, though.
You're going to say horror? You are wrong.
What?
Wrong.
What?
That's a Lifetime movie. That is Imaginary Playmate, 2006.
Oh, man. I think I haven't even had that one written down.
I can't imagine how boring that would be. If it's not a horror movie, then what is it?
Yeah.
A little girl with an imaginary playmate? Who cares? Okay. Movie number three. A woman returns to her small-town home to investigate father's death, which authorities considered a mere hunting accident. That's it.
Read it again.
A woman returns to her small-town home to investigate father's death, which authorities considered a mere hunting accident.
All right, this feels like you edited down the description to sound more innocuous.
No.
He did two Lifetime movies in a row. I'm going to say it's a horror movie.
Wrong.
Damn it. Damn it.
That's a Lifetime movie. That's The Secret. The Secret of Hidden Lake from 2006.
Mm.
I'm getting better at this.
You're psyching me out.
Yeah. All right. Movie number 4. Washed up true crime writer Ellison Oswalt finds a box of Super 8 home movies that suggests the murder he is currently researching is the work of a serial killer whose work dates back to the 1960s.
Is this 8mm?
Is that a guess?
I'll say horror movie.
You are correct.
Okay, good.
Interestingly enough, do you know, so you're guessing 8mm, that's not what it is. Would you like to hazard another guess?
I guess Super 8 isn't 8mm, I mean, Super 8 must be 8mm film, right?
I have no idea. Could not help you.
This
is a well-known horror movie. Modern horror movie.
I don't know.
This is Sinister from 2012.
Okay.
Which I never, like, I just can't. I've said it before, I'll say it again. They all, in Sinister and Insidious, they just all run together for me. I'm like, oh.
They're talking about doing a crossover movie between Sinister and Insidious, and I wonder if anyone will actually notice.
I don't know. I would never notice. I'd be like, oh, okay. It's just, what is it? Okay. It's the same as both of them. Okay, the last one. A husband and wife who recently lost their baby adopt a 9-year-old girl who is not nearly as innocent as she claims to be.
Okay, this is a horror movie, and I think I know this one. Oh. This is the...
Extra points.
It's like called Imposter or something. It's like the little girl is actually like an older woman. She's like in her 20s or 30s.
Oh.
And she's got like a... wears a choker.
You may actually have, you may actually, I mean.
I can't remember what the title is, but it's.
No, yeah. Extra points because you don't remember the title, but that's impressive because you are correct. This is The Orphan.
Orphan, yeah.
From okay. 2009. Yeah. So great job. You got 3 out of 5.
I haven't even seen that. I've only seen reviews of it.
I think I've seen it. I've seen so many like little horror movies. They just all kind of run together, so. This is very similar to a lot of them. So let us know how you did if you played Lifetime Movie or Horror Movie. And now we're going to transition into our second and final game of the episode.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 50.
That makes me cringe so hard. Let us know.
I love that I just put David at the end and let it just
50.
Pan out. That's great.
Is it great?
I love it.
Let us know if it's actually great. So, Kill Count is a game where I propose two movies to Bryce, and he has to determine which one has a higher kill count. This one is themed sci-fi movies. It also has an additional theme of having massive kill counts. So each one of these movies have tremendous amounts of people dying in them, and they're usually they're all sci-fi movies. So the first movie is Starship Troopers, and that's versus The Chronicles of Riddick.
Starship Troopers versus Chronicles of Riddick. Are bug deaths included?
No, I don't believe they are.
I'm going to go Starship Troopers.
That's a good guess. Starship Troopers is a tremendously violent film, and you're correct.
Yay!
So the kill counts on those is Starship Troopers, 256 people, and The Chronicles of Riddick, not too far behind, 187.
Hmm.
Okay, our next movies are Aliens versus Predator Requiem.
Oh, God. I remember seeing it.
And I'm putting it up against Akira.
Were there more than one Alien versus Predator?
Oh, yeah. There was Aliens versus Predator and Aliens versus Predator Requiem, and I think Alien versus Predator
two? I can't remember which one I've seen, though. It was terrible, whatever it was.
Yeah, the first one was very... They were all pretty bad. The first one was bad.
Which one was the one that it had the chain link fence that marked the main alien? Like, it got hit by a chain link fence or something, so you could tell, like, ooh, this is the protagonist alien, because we need that.
That's right. There was a... Oh, man. I don't know which one that was, but there was a video game that came out, Aliens vs. Predators, the newer one, which had a skin of an alien that was from that. So it had the fence branded on its head. I love that skin. I love that game. It was a great game. So you've seen Akira, I assume. The cult classic anime.
I'm going to say Akira.
Wow. You did it. By just four deaths.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, so Akira had 119 deaths. And Alien vs. Predator Requiem, 115. There's a lot going on in that movie. 115 people were involved in Alien vs. Predator Requiem.
Is that counting the aliens?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe.
Is it counting the predators?
Yes. For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Next movie, or our next matchup is Resident Evil Apocalypse versus Blade.
Ooh, both super campy movies. Tons of deaths. Man. Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
If it was Blade 2, it'd be easy to say.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
Blade 2 is just...
insane.
I think there's an entire, like, dance floor of people that gets murdered.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, man, that was a great one.
I'll say Resident Evil Apocalypse was the last one? Was it the last?
I believe so. Like, nothing hinges on this. Like, I don't take your kids if you get it wrong.
Yeah, I'm going to say... Blade.
Wrong.
Damn.
Wrong. It's Resident Evil Apocalypse. 123 deaths on that one versus Blade, which is not far behind at 111. I really like the Blade trilogy. Like, all of those were great.
Blade 1 and 2 are great. I've heard that Blade 3 was a clusterfuck.
Yeah, I can't really recall Blade 3, so maybe it was just 1 and 2 that were great.
I love seeing clips of Ryan Reynolds talking about the experience of filming Blade with Wesley Snipes.
Ryan Reynolds was in Blade?
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall that.
And he talks about how they didn't, like, I don't even think he could film his scenes with Wesley Snipes, the scenes that he was in with Wesley Snipes.
Why?
Just because Wesley Snipes was super difficult and wouldn't come out of his trailer or something like that.
Wow.
And so they filmed the stuff that was what Ryan Reynolds was saying, and then later filmed Blade's reaction to it. And so it makes it a lot funnier because Wesley Snipes is reacting to nothing and he's, like, not acting that hard and just kind of being, you know, gruff or whatever. And Ryan Reynolds is just saying the most ridiculous stuff to try to get a reaction. So, anyways.
Dude.
I get the feeling that Wesley Snipes is not, like, the funnest person to work with on set.
Well, is he out of jail yet?
Yeah, he's been out of jail for a while.
Oh, he got sent to jail for tax evasion. It's kind of a dumb move on the government's part.
Yeah.
Because he could be out, as Adam Carolla says, he could be out there making tons more money that you can get him legit taxes from him. But instead, he's sucking up taxpayer money sitting in prison.
Right.
That's stupid. Anyway, pair up number four. So we got a favorite of yours. You're actually wearing a T-shirt of it right now. No, that says The Last Jedi on it, but it's... The Last Jedi.
Sponsored by Volvo, or, damn, sponsored by Volkswagen.
Volkswagen. So this is Star Wars A New Hope, which I think that picture is from A New Hope, probably. I mean, it looks like it. Anyway, Star Wars A New Hope versus Children of Men.
Oh, man. Yeah, let's go Star Wars.
Wrong.
Damn.
That's, but they're very close. They're only two apart. Mm. Children of Men, 75. Star Wars: New Hope, 75.
I'm gonna always default to the war movies. Because war, there's a lot of death.
Yeah, war equals hell.
Yeah.
Final movie is, or final pair up is Serenity. Of I believe that's of Firefly origins, versus The Fifth Element.
Fifth Element.
Oh, wow. Why are you so quick on that? What makes you say Fifth Element?
Just because.
Because I want to get this over with, David. Jesus Christ.
Well, there's the whole, like, cruise ship full of people that...
Basically die.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Fifth Element has 80 people, and Serenity has 74. So, I don't know how many you got. I think you got, like, 3 again.
Mm-hmm.
That seems about right. So, good job.
Yay, me!
And with that, that's starting to wrap up our episode.
Game over, man! It's game over!
The game's over now, Bryce. So, with that, thank you very much for listening to Horror Movie Talk. Check us out at horrormovietalk.com. If you're doing any shopping on Amazon, just click through the link on our website to help support the podcast. Go ahead and bookmark that link. And that way, every time you head to Amazon, you can you can give us a little boost. Put a few cents in our pocket. Because those 25 cents, they could be worth, you know... They could be worth $5,000 or $6,000 in 20 years from now. So that could make a big difference to Bryce and I, who will be doing this in 20 years. You wait and see. It'll happen. Again, take our audience survey if you haven't already, and thank you very much for listening. Oh, finally, Shudder. Check them out. SHUDDER. Enter HMT at checkout, and you get a free 30-day trial subscription to Shudder, which is the horror movie streaming service. So check them out. Enter HMT at checkout, and it'll help us out quite a bit. And with that, we love you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.